meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, meeting is now being recorded. Would you like a roll call?
I'm sorry, say again.
Would you like a roll call?
A roll call? No, I don't think so.
Okay, all right. Well, the floor is all yours. Please proceed.
All right, then. good morning, good evening, and good night. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Working Track 2 session on the new GTLD subscript procedures material. I am your co-chair, Michael Fleming, and today we have Phil Buckingham with us as well today. So it looks like we have a full house, and we're going to go ahead and get started. First of all, we have just ended the ICANN 57 meeting in Hyderabad, so I think everyone's had a week or two to kind of get picked up and back up to speed to where they are at. So in that case, there may be an updated COI. It's been a few weeks since we've actually had our last meeting, so if anyone does have an updated COI, please, if you feel free to share it, put it in the chat, perhaps. And then next, we'll be looking at a recap from ICANN 57. Just going to briefly go over what was discussed and kind of give everyone a basic understanding of what we talked about. But I do kindly ask that everyone look at the high-level notes and please view the transcript, or you can also look at the recording. Rather long session in this case, and so I understand there's a lot of material, but the more you can familiarize yourself with that, the better that we can have for future discussions. Next, we'll be looking at some reserved names on the top level. For that, I will be turning it over to our guest co-chair speaker, Jeff Newman, today. But as always, many of you are, of course, familiar with him. And then we'll be looking at any other business. Does anyone have any other business that they would like to address at this time, just for us to be aware that we need to address this? Going once? Going twice? Okay, perfect. Now then, we'll look at that. If there's any other business, please feel free to put it in the chat, and we'll try to address it at the end. So in that case, I'll give a brief recap of what we discussed at ICANN 57. So ICANN 57, we looked at three high-level interest topics for this working track. First of all, we explored the discussion of the single-based registry agreement versus category-based registry agreements. And just to summarize what this kind of discussed there, I think at this point we have a consensus that, we should in some way be able to recognize the categories in some way or another with the registry agreement. However, if we do this with separate registry agreements, or if we do this with a single registry agreement and a specification that will actually recognize the category, which model we need to choose is what we're actually currently looking at. And I think that we need to have a bit more discussion in order to reach a conclusion on this. And we're also looking at having input from the different category groups. For example, I believe the BRG will be providing us with a bit more feedback as to kind of help us understand their argument for the category-based agreements. And then also, I believe that we'll be receiving some more feedback from other groups as well, such as the verification group. I believe will be also providing us with some future feedback as soon as they're able to construct that and have it ready for us, which I believe it's going to take a bit more time. So I think we'll probably take this out into the new year. Not this new year's, but from January or so, I believe we'll come back to this topic. And also we looked at if ICANN would be able to handle different registry agreements. And in, I think in our conclusion, we were able to see that ICANN does have the resources to be able to at least tackle the issue of different registry agreements and work with, those applicants, depending on what their category might be. Then we also looked at the continuing operations instrument, and we were able to kind of go over, you know, what is the fundamental issue here. And from that, we reached the conclusion that the EBRO process, the Emergency Backend Registry Operator process, that the continuing operations instrument is designed to provide funds for, is a process that is necessary. So I believe everyone can be in agreement that we do need the EBRO process, but however, whether or not the COI is the best model to have to pay for those funds is something that we need to explore further. First of all, we need to look at whether or not the COI, if there's other models out there that can be used besides the COI. Then we also need to look at what the problems are that the COI provided. I mean, sorry, what problems the COI produced. I know it was a rather painful application. It was a rather painful experience for many, myself included. But we'll be kind of, next we'll be putting together what issues we had with the COI and how we can fix it. So we'll be coming back to this in a future meeting. However, if you've got issues in regards to this, go ahead and throw them out there, and we'll be more than happy to include them in our issue list. And then we also did briefly talk about the reserve name issue. However, what kind of the conclusion, or at least from what we were able to grasp at this different from this discussion, is that we need to come back to this issue. We need to kind of go back to what and ask ourselves, what are we supposed to be doing with this? And so we kind of reorganized the kind of what we were looking at, what we were talking about, and we're going to be actually tackling this issue itself today. So in that note, I believe that's the overall gist of what we did discuss it in Hyderabad. Phil, I believe you were probably on the audio in Hyderabad, but Jeff, did you have any other input at what we discussed at Hyderabad?
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Hopefully you can hear me. I think one of the other things that we had talked about just as far as administrative is to handle issues in a more digestible way in smaller chunks as opposed to, you know, jumping from subject to subject on these calls. So what we're going to do a better job as a leadership group is, you know, setting out a topic for the call, providing some materials prior to the call so that the work track participants can review it. And then, you know, we'll discuss those on that next call, planning on or hoping that everyone will have read the materials prior to the call and be able to ask questions. So I think, you know, we definitely took a lot back just as a leadership team on how we need to kind of struck things going forward. So other than the substance, which Michael talked about, I just wanted to point out just some of the administrative things.
Thank you, Jeff. So, yes, kind of following what Jeff has said, we are taking it back and we're going to be keeping with one issue or one topic per meeting. I believe is what we'll probably do in the future. We've kind of seen the response that we need to allocate more time for background material reading and get those materials out there sooner. So my apologies until now of how we've done this, but I will make sure to assist everyone and, kind of give way to a better, what others think that we can, how we can do things better. So if you do have suggestions, please do not hesitate to get out to us. With that said, we have next to jumping into our next discussion, which is on the reserve names on the top level. And for this, we do have a document in the that we sent out prior to the meeting. We'll use this to go over each top level, category. We'll go over each one individually and just kind of see what the change was from the GNSO policy and to the applicant guidebook. And for this, I will turn it over to Jeff to host this one. So, Jeff, you have the floor. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Michael. And because the version on the screen is kind of small, I'm going to look at the we created a Google Doc, which has got all this information on it. So I'm going to refer to that. And so, Michael, if you could just keep an eye on the chat, and if there are any hands raised, interrupt and just ask those questions. Okay. So I wanted to, in the spirit of having more easily digestible topics, we are going to be solely focused on this call on reservations at the top level. We're not going to talk about the second level. We're not going to talk about the third level. So, to reinforce that, we're not going to be talking about the examples that are in the base contract. These are all reservations at the top level that we're going to be talking about during this call. So I understand and know that there may be some confusion, but I'm trying to hope that this will make things a little bit clearer. So what we did in this chart is we have a name of the category of names that were reserved at the top level, where the recommendation for the reservation came from in 2009, and then in 2012 when the applicant guidebook was drafted, or I should say finalized, how it was implemented or whether it was implemented. And then there's another column on notes, which we'll be filling in based on our discussion. What I don't want to do is, and if anyone disagrees, speak up, but I don't think we should necessarily revisit the rationale of each of these categories unless you think or unless people believe that circumstances have changed between the time that the initial reservation was developed or the policy recommendation and now. So, in other words, I don't want to judge as to whether the GNSO is correct in 2009 unless there's some sort of change in circumstances. Hope that makes sense as kind of an intro. So, if you look at the chart, the first category of reserve names at the top level were ICANN/IANA names, and they came in two different forms. The first one is in row number, I'm just trying to look to see if their numbers are on the, okay, there's not numbers on the document, but the first that's showing, there's numbers in the Google Doc, but not on the version that's displaying. But in the first line on ICANN/IANA names, those are the names that are specific to ICANN and specific to IANA in terms of the names of organizations or names that they had specifically requested at the time to be reserved. So they included at the time, in 2009, ASO, GNSO, ICANN, Internic, and CCNSO. In 2012, that was amended to also include AWAC, GAC, NRO, RSAC, and SAC. So those are the names that were included in the applicant guidebook. What you'll notice immediately is that there obviously was no PTI or any of the other organizations that are set up under the new bylaws. So those were not applicable in 2012. And the IANA names that were reserved included the AFRINIC, APNIC, ARIN, example, GTLD servers, IAB, IANA, IANA servers, IESG, IETF, IRTF, ISTF, LACNIC, LATNIC, RFC editor, RIPE, root servers. All of those were adopted in the 2012 guidebook, except for LATNIC, L-A-T-N-I-C, presumably because I think at the time the Latin American TLD, or the Latin American NIC was choosing between LAC and LAT. So to be cautious, in 2009 they reserved both, but in 2012 that was not deemed to be necessary. So that's the category of names of ICANN-IANA related to the specific organizations. And then there was an additional category of ICANN-IANA names in 2009 that were reserved that only included the Unicode version of example. In 2012, due to some recommendations that ICANN had from, I believe it might have been the SAC or the RSAC, they also included invalid localhost test and TLD in the 2012 guidebook. In the notes section, and this refers to something I think Aubrey just typed into the chat, I have, well, there's an IETF RFC that talks about names that should be reserved for the IETF to use. It's RFC 6761. And at this point, the only other name it includes is .onion, but potentially could include .hominet, and possibly at some point .alt. Those, for those of you not familiar with, there is an MOU between ICANN and the IETF that was just renewed, or just amended, I should say, under the new bylaws, which basically gives IETF the authority to reserve any names that it sees are essential. I'm not using the right words, but essentially it gives the IETF the first right to reserve any name that it believes is necessary in order to implement its program. Now, this is something that the GNSO has never really discussed. It is enshrined in the IETF MOU. Yes.
We have a hand up from Aubrey Doria.
Great. So Aubrey could probably provide some better background. So Aubrey.
Hi, sorry, this is Aubrey. I was willing to wait until you finished the explanation, but I put my hand up when it came to like right of first refusal, and I think that's going too strong. The RFC 6761 allows a protocol action to use a name for protocol reasons. Now, it's unclear whether that name should ever enter the DNS, and the notion is that no, the name should not be a global DNS usage. It should just be, for example, local usage or something out. So there's tight constraints on it. It's not a first refusal type of thing. And just wanted to point out that 6761 is about to undergo review in the IETF. But at the moment, yes, .onion is the only 6761 name, although perhaps local was at one point also approved, but that was already in our lists. HomeNet is the next one I know of being applied for. And .alt has already been applied for, but has never quite met the criteria yet. So those are three. But any protocol can come along and use the 6761 procedures to say our protocol needs a name. Now, a lot of us say, why a top-level name? Why not a second-level name? But that's another issue. But they can request a top-level name. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan.
I don't think Alan has his hand up.
Oh, okay. I mistook the microphone for a hand.
That's just the microphone, not a hand.
Sorry, Alan. Okay, so on those ICANN-IANA names, does anyone have any thoughts, any questions, any reasons or any change of circumstances in which you could think of to not include these names or any additional names, and specifically whether we should include any of the other new ICANN-related names like PCI or any, I don't know if there are any other abbreviations, but does anyone have any thoughts on that?
Jeff, I just kind of like to raise the notion, or at least raise the motion that we do kind of look at the, at least list up the new ICANN, the new acronyms, the new names that came out of the INF transition, and at least put them up on the screen to look at whether or not we should, whether or not we should add these to the list, or if we can at least have some way that we can even mention these in our recommendation.
Okay, so then I would take back as an action item. I know there's people typing in, but let's see, Steve or ICANN staff, if we can get together a list of potential acronyms that would be included under the new structure, in theory, under in this category. Steve, does that sound something we can do? All right, I'm going to assume yes is the answer. So we'll move on to the next category of names, let me go back to my chart, are the symbols. Now, this is this should be a pretty straightforward one. It's not a reservation as we would normally think of it as being a reserved name as such, but it was included in the 2009 policy, which basically said that
Michael,
the only symbol that you're allowed,
Michael,
the only symbol that you're allowed to use is a hyphen. So that's that recommendation that was adopted in 2012. I don't think necessarily there should be or can be any changes to that. But if there's a particular concern, let's hear it out. It sounded, Phil, like you wanted to say something.
Yeah. John Nimitz just made a comment in the chat. Have you seen it? He said perhaps add a timestamp on it.
Relation.
To 6761. So I think that, Avery's kind of responded to that. It's an ongoing discussion in the IETF, trying to find a way to make sure that we don't step on each other's toes. So I think that, John, it's a good suggestion. Let's figure out how we can introduce that. Maybe Avery, you can see how we can introduce that into the IETF process to make sure that, we have that ability. So Rubens asks a very good question, saying, were hyphens allowed in the 2012 round? And
yeah.
You know what? I believe they were not. I actually think that they were not. So maybe I do need to update that chart. So it basically says that it was adopted. So the 2012 guidebook adopted the 2009 recommendation, but also excluded the hyphen as well from the top level. Is that something we want to revisit? Anyone got any comments on that? So one question I have, and I'm not sure there's anyone on this call that would be able to answer it. So was there a technical reason why we did not allow hyphens
yes.
in the 2012 guidebook? And I understand why it wouldn't be allowed in the third and fourth positions as an IDN. It would look like an IDN. But we should find out if there's a technical reason or was it just for simplicity reasons. I'm not sure. Is anyone, have any comments on that? And while you're thinking about that, John Nevitt said we'd want it in the ICANN policy if possible. This is going back to the 6761 IETF name. And John, I think the issue with that is that there's a contract between ICANN and IETF to respect the RFC, what comes out of that RFC. So I'm not sure ICANN policy would override IETF, the agreement between the IETF and ICANN, which is why I kind of mentioned that why we introduced it into the IETF process, but that's certainly worth looking into. Okay, yeah. Ruben. Yeah.
You're reading it exactly. Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, Ruben says there's a reason for not allowing the double hyphens in third and fourth positions, but no technical reason that he's aware of to avoid hyphens. So, in general. So my recommendation would be, absent any technical reason, it would seem to me that there should not be a restriction on hyphens other than the third and fourth position.
Jeff, we have Alan has his hand up.
Yep, thanks, Alan.
Yeah, I have a vague recollection, and I may have made it up, but my vague recollection is that it was simpler to simply not allow them and to have a relatively complex and obscure rule which wouldn't be understood by anyone who knew what Puni Code was as to why they were not allowed. But I'm not 100% sure that's reality. I may have imagined it as a reason, as a good reason for not allowing them. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Yeah, I think we'll go and dig in a little bit more, but absent any technical reason, I don't think we should, by policy, restrict the use of the hyphens. And so we'll find out, other than including hyphens at the third and fourth level, whether there's any technical reason for those restrictions. Any last comments on symbols? Okay, moving along to the next category. Oh, and also just with the ICANN IANA names and the ICANN, the two categories of ICANN IANA names, they were only reserved in ASCII. They were not reserved in any other language. I'm assuming, since there were no comments from anyone on this call, that we should include other language translations of those terms, if they even have translations. I'm assuming that there's no one on this call calling for foreign translations of those. Michael, you have your hand raised. Is that on this?
Yes. Well, Jeff, I believe that what I read from the GNSO policy was that IDN equivalents to the example and test, I believe, were also reserved in the policy, but for the IANA and ICANN specific names like AFN, like ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, rather not spell it out, but those types of acronyms are not reserved in other languages, and merely because I believe the idea is that, and I could be wrong, of course, so if anyone speaks another language and has a different notion, please feel free to jump in. But it's literally next to impossible in some ways to actually kind of translate that, or at least you can provide a phonetic translation, but I don't think the meaning carries itself as well. So I think for this reason, not providing or not looking at actual equivalent or translations of such as ICANN or AFRINIC would be a plausible explanation. But specific generic words like the word example or test, those are translatable in an actual understandable sense in other languages. So in that case, I think we should stick with that type of policy. That's my own opinion.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Okay. There's some more discussion going on as hyphens at the third and fourth level, or sorry, hyphens at the third and fourth position. We're not only for IDNs, but for other potential other conversions. So so XN dash dash is just one version, and that's why hyphens were reserved at both of those levels. Moving on to the next set of recommendations after symbols, we have single letters. Now, in this case, the GNSO policy in 2009 had recommended reservation of single letters at the top level based on technical questions that were raised. If sufficient research at a later date demonstrates that the technical issues and concerns are addressed, the topic of releasing reservation status can be reconsidered. Up and through 2012, I do not believe there was any such research done. And so in 2012, all single character ASCII TLDs were not allowed. And also single character IDNs were not allowed either. Is there any discussion? Is anyone in this group aware of any research that would have been done or any burning desire to look at this issue more closely for single letter top level domains? Michael?
Sorry, Jeff. Didn't we discuss this briefly in the Hyderabad, specifically about whether or not to allow the single letter IDN on the top level? I think that the discussion in that area looked at allowing it in case that the IDN did have an actual word, represented a whole word, and only in such cases would it be allowed on the top level. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes. I was actually starting to just refer to the ASCII. But you're correct that in the IDN version there was discussion of allowing in certain languages, and that's where research needs to be done, in certain scripts where two characters would be allowed. I'm sorry, where one character would be allowed. So that's something I think we need to kind of put on the action item list. We need to check with some IDN experts. Okay, moving down to single and two digits. So these are numbers. It was recommended in the 2009 policy that digits be reserved at the top level in order to avoid potential confusion with IP addresses within software applications. Examples would include .3 and .99. The 2012 guidebook went further than that and said that ASCII labels must consist entirely of letters, or the label must be a valid IDNA label. That's why I think that's where the rule was that didn't also allow hyphens. Unless it was an IDN label. So that is something we can choose to discuss or choose to keep as existing policy, adopt as new policy, the restriction of all numbers or only numbers at the top level, where it's not combined. I want to distinguish this between numbers that may be combined with letters. Hope that makes sense. So this is just a top-level name consisting only of numbers, whether 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 9 digits at all. Are there any thoughts on that from this group? We have a quiet group. Absent some reason to change the rules, At this point, all numbers are still reserved. And this is not a final decision, so if people on this call just don't want to speak up and want to send an email, that's fine. We can readdress. But I'm not getting a burning desire to address that subject. But the one area I do definitely want to address is the combination of numbers and letters. So the overbroad rule that said an ASCII label must consist entirely of letters ruled out the application for something like H2O or any other top-level string that contained both letters and numbers. Is there a reason that we should restrict the combination of letters and numbers together? Okay, Alan.
Yes, Alan Hayes.
Yep. Thanks.
The main reason I can think of is that it opens up yet another universal acceptance problem. And do we really need more of those? There's an perhaps infinite amount of code which presumes there are no numbers in top level domains.
Okay, so you're basically So what you're saying is that because we believe there may be some universal acceptance issues, it may be just more simple to just keep the rule of only letters, potentially hyphens, which we talked about earlier. But Christina points out, shouldn't we leave it up to an applicant to decide if it's willing to take on a universal acceptance issue?
I guess
yeah, I'd like to echo it. Sorry, Alan, you were speaking.
Yeah, my opinion is we have enough that we have to change to add extra things at this point complicates our life and the life of future generations more than it needs to. I understand the fact that it might prohibit some valid trademarks or other things from not being used.
Okay, Michael.
Alan, I was actually going to echo that in a way. I can think of just a few examples of some trademark holders that would actually be interested in the number letter combination of the top level domain. But I guess I'd like some more information. I'm not as tech savvy as others are, but maybe we could have more background information as to why this would be a universal acceptance issue. I think Kurt just provided with some feedback. There was a concern that a leading or trailing digit would be interpreted as the start as an IP address by some application browsers. That concern is demonstrable. It is less demonstrable that an interior digit would be interpreted somehow by an IP address. So thank you, Kurt, for that feedback. I'd like to explore more how we can actually have how this would be a universal acceptance issue before we just jump in and say, okay, only letter.
So, Michael, I think, again, as Kurt kind of pointed out, that because numbers were initially seen as an IP address, and like other software coders that hard code their applications, they coded their applications to only recognize letters of a specific character, strings of a specific character length with only potentially only letters, and not recognize others. So, as Aubrey said, lazy code is the primary reason for universal acceptance issues. I don't think there's anything else we could state other than just it's just coders not doing what they're necessarily supposed to do. But Kurt's got a point of should we treat domains, top-level domains that start with a number different than domains that start with a letter that may contain a number after it in the interior. Thoughts on that, Alan?
Yeah, my hand was up before that. I guess I object to average use of the term lazy code. What you're going to find in many cases is not lazy code. People were going to extra trouble to check for things to make sure that users did not end up with an error. You know, they were being smarter than the user in the day when all TLDs were two and three letters, and they were trying to protect users in some cases. So it's not necessarily lazy code. I certainly think allowing either leading or trading numbers would be problematic. Whether we should allow them in the middle or not, I'm not particularly strong on. My personal feeling is better not to make any changes if we don't need to, but I would certainly object to leading ones, for instance, as being really problematic.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Anyone else? We have a lot of people on the call. Any other thoughts? Recycling. Greg.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. This has some of the sounds of a Y2K problem, or at least a legacy problem that eventually I think will need to be dealt with. I can't believe that until the end of time or the relevance of domain names, we're going to bar numbers from TLDs. The question is, what's the solution, and is it one for the near term or further term? But it makes no sense to kind of perpetuate this forever. And if the problem that has been identified regarding universal acceptance relates only to leading or trailing numbers, or then there's no reason not to allow numbers in the middle. And then in that case, we're overreacting, to the issue. So I think, we shouldn't necessarily, continue, to support, suboptimal past practices, recognizing though that that's easy to say, but harder to solve.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Alan's back in the queue. I just want to point out a comment. Kieran has raised a comment saying, well, can we ask the Universal Acceptance Working Group? And I think that's a good idea if we could put that as an action item. And then Alan.
Yeah, thank you. I'll go a step further than that. SAC is regularly asking, certainly, ACs and SOs to identify any problems that they believe need to be studied. I think this is one, and some perhaps the earlier ones on hyphens, is something that we should forward to SAC and ask them to provide a report on.
Thanks, Alan. What does everyone else think about that? I mean, I think that's a good idea. Obviously, they don't have to take it up, but as Kieran says in the chat, I'm all about asking whatever experts will lend an ear and a helping hand. So I think that's something that leadership will take back and see if we can come up with a letter or a way to ask the SAC. I mean, we could always refer to both and see who, if anyone, wants to take it up. Ruben says, SAC has a limited workload for each year, so if we want something for them in 2017, we need to hurry it up. Thanks, Ruben. We will add this on our leadership call for this week. We talked about. They did report during the 2012 round. We should check to see if there was a report, and we will do that as well. Okay, anything else on this category? All right, moving along to two letters. So two letters in 2009, basically the policy, and I just summarized it, was you only allow two letters for existing ccTLDs and new future ccTLDs, but not any new gTLDs. And in 2012, that was adopted, except two character IDNs were allowed unless it was visually similar to any one character label in any script, or two, it was visually similar to any possible two character attribute combination. And this is also a subject that was taken up, or is being taken up, by the cross-community working group for the use of country and territory names. And the one recommendation they were seemingly able to agree on, at least in their preliminary recommendations, was to keep the reservation of two letters for the use by ccTLDs and future ccTLDs. Is there any additional discussion? I know there was a lot of discussion that took place in that working group, but absent that complete information, is there anyone that wants to discuss this issue at the moment? Okay, silence is taken, as we will see how, if that's the final recommendation out of the CCWG, or whether that issue is ultimately reserved, or is ultimately given to us, but that's where it stands at this point. There was then a topic called tag name, and that basically said, with a recommendation in 2009, this is that the IDN issue, or the tag issue, where basically said do not allow new GTLDs with hyphens in both the third and fourth position. I should have put in the 2012 guidebook column that it was adopted. I don't see any reason to change that, but is there anyone that wants to make any comments on tag name? Okay, we're able to move a little more quickly here. Good. The next category is Nick, who is in WWW, said there in the recommendations it must be reserved at the top level, but only in ASCII, only in this form, do not attempt to translate. That's what was adopted in the guidebook. I'm assuming everyone is good. I shouldn't assume, sorry. For anyone, so Ruben says we might want to have add RDDS. And then comments that the policy allowed .web but not www. It looks inconsistent. We're all capped out of that bag, I think, at this point, really, since we're talking about the top level. So the question is, now we should, or the action item is to consider adding RDDS, since that term is now being used to replace who is. Would anyone have an issue if we added RDDS to the list of those names? Michael agrees. Doesn't seem like there's any vehement disagreement with adding RDDS. Okay, moving right along to
Jeff. It's Alan.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Alan.
Yeah. I have no objection to RDDS, but just to note that it's often abbreviated RDS, so we may want to add that one also. The PDP, for instance, that is currently going on, uses RDS, not RDDS. Just a thought.
Okay. Let's put that in parentheses. And I personally like a common nomenclature, so it would be good if we chose one as opposed to two, but let's see. Well, Roger's saying RDDS and RDS are technically different. Roger, you want to explain that? I'm not the techie, so. Is there, or are you saying both should be reserved, or only one of them is really the one that we should be thinking about? Roger?
Roger, please go ahead.
He's typing. I'm not sure he may still be on mute, although it's not showing you. All right, looks like voice is not working. Okay. Well, while Roger is typing, we will then move on and still consider this as to whether one or both should be reserved. And hopefully we can put Roger's explanation into the notes for today. Moving along to one we're actually going to skip at this point, because it's a much bigger issue, is geographic names. Only to point out that basically what the original recommendation was is that there should be no geographical reserve names, but there should be a dispute process, really is what it boils down to. Obviously, that was a heavily discussed issue, and in 2012, you could see in the column there as to what actually was decided, and the dispute policies and everything else. So this is actually a much bigger subject we are not going to tackle now, but will be, or is currently partially the subject of the country and territory names cross-community working group. So we're going to skip that for now. The geopolitical names, we're going to skip as well. The recommendation was the term geopolitical names should be avoided until such time as a useful definition can be adopted. And then what I should have put in the definition is that there were no geopolitical, at least I could not find a geopolitical section in the guidebook. I think all the terms were either in the geographic names or the next subject, controversial names, but I did not notice anything that was geopolitical. Okay, seeing no discussion on that and trying to get through this list. We also had controversial names, which in 2009, the GNSO had recommended that there should not be a category of controversial names, but there should be a dispute policy. And essentially, that was sort of adopted, but that there were no controversial names unless you consider the Olympic names as controversial, and Red Cross. But there was an objection process for those names. That subject is actually for work track 3. So, but the general question of do we still agree with the policy that there should be no, quote, controversial names reserved at the top level, but it should still be handled through some sort of dispute objection process, which is what track 3 is looking at. While you're thinking about that, just to go back, Christina points out there is no definition of geopolitical names or a section in the guidebook, but it has been raised within the GAC in connection with the GeoNames Working Group. So that's something obviously we will look to receive if there are issues that come out of the GAC with respect to geopolitical names. not seeing a desire at this point to go over creating a list of controversial names. We'll assume that recommendation stays the same, at least up for review by track three on the limited public interest objection. Now, there were three other categories that were added by the guidebook: declared variants, what they called strings ineligible for delegation, which is the Red Cross and Olympic name, and the general rules that basically say that you must have no more than 63 characters, which is a technical limitation, and upper and lowercase characters are treated as identical. Those were the three additional ones that were added in the guidebook. And finally, there were names that were added. Holm and Corp were added to the not moving forward at this time due to name collision issues, which will be looked at by, or name collision in general is being looked at by Work Track 4. Are there any major categories that we've missed or that we should add? Sorry, I'm going back to the chat. Christina says, why wouldn't we put a placeholder on controversial name pending Work Track 3's discussion of limited public interest objection? We could end up deferring to an objection that's eliminated. I think that's a good idea, so we'll put in a placeholder at this point, pending the outcome of Work Track 3. Are there any other categories of names that we can think of that should be reserved? Now, Phil's pointing out an example of a geographic objection. At three characters, which I'm assuming will come up from the country and territory names working group, but at this point, it's not a category. Okay, I'm not seeing any discussion on that, which seems like a good place to leave off, Michael, for you to close the call.
All right, that means I get 2 more minutes of nap time. So, actually, no, it's, we only got 30 seconds. So, all right then. Thank you, everyone, for a very beneficial and constructive, that's the word I'm looking for, constructive meeting today. I think, first of all, I want to say thank you to Jeff for putting together this document and to kind of taking the head on this issue. And I hope to actually kind of jump in there myself and for when we move on to second level, but that's another topic for another day. So at this point, if anyone has anything else, please do send it to us by email. For the action items, we will discuss it as on our next leadership call, and we will get back to you. All right, then thank you very much, everyone, and have a lovely day. Bye-bye.